When you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Isaac Zoria. I represent the appellant in this appeal. I would like to reserve a few minutes for
rebuttal. We'll try to help you keep track.
Thank you, Your Honor. Admiralty jurisdiction in this case does not exist because the underlying dispute in this case is between Alaskan residents who dispute over how properly to characterize their business relationship. The underlying dispute in this case is not wholly maritime in nature, but rather is exclusively related to Alaska statutes, specifically Alaska's Uniform Partnership Act.
Well, we read it, and I understand. You tell me what the acts of your client were prior to the time this action was brought. He disclaimed, by his actions, he seemed to disclaim all partnership aspects of this relationship until it came time to defend this lawsuit, and then he claimed it was a partnership. Now, am I missing something? What does the record show about his conduct and his legal actions prior to the time of this lawsuit being brought?
Well, his conduct, first of all, the appellee, Mr. Rockwell, is the only person of all the employees for this vessel who didn't receive his seaman wages during this period of time. He's the only one. All the other people who were seamen aboard the vessel received their payment. Now, before this whole matter arose, April 22nd, 1998, Mr. Rockwell came to Mr. Swenson and said, "I have a business proposal for you. I want to start up a business between yourself and myself to purchase a vessel." At this point, there was no vessel at all in the possession of either party.
Can I back up just a minute? I think we can, once I've done this, we can move on easily to exactly where you now are. But you started out with the argument that there is no jurisdiction in the Admiralty Court. And I think we take it as established law that if we're talking about establishing the relationship, the consequences of a partnership relationship, there is no Admiralty jurisdiction.
That's okay.
On the other hand, if we're talking about establishing the consequences of an employer-employee relationship, there is Admiralty jurisdiction.
Yes.
And I take it also as sort of black-letter law that a court has jurisdiction to determine its jurisdiction, which means that the court sitting in Admiralty had jurisdiction to determine whether or not this was a partnership or an employee relationship. So your argument really is not a separate jurisdictional argument. Your argument is with the merits of the court's decision, because the merits of the court's decision are the basis for the jurisdictional determination as well. So what we're really just asking about is, was the district judge correct in finding that this was an employee-employer relationship?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and the main error in the district court's assessment is that he never once identified Alaska's Uniform Partnership Act. This relationship between Mr. Swenson and Mr. Rockwell was formed before the vessel was purchased, and it was formed under Alaska statutes. And Alaska statute permits partnership by estoppel. There was ample evidence produced that Mr. Rockwell walked around to everyone saying, "I am a partner. I am the co-owner of this vessel. This is my vessel. I'm the partner."
The reason this is a tricky case, or the reason it turns into a lawsuit instead of just pay me my money, is that the relationship was ambiguous. I mean, what you say is right, but there were some other things that support an employee relationship. And the district judge said, "Well, you know, on balance, while this is confusing and so on, I find this was employer-employee." Why is that, I think, you have to determine, clearly erroneous?
I think on jurisdictional questions, this court exercises de novo review, I believe.
So are you saying, but if they're disputed facts, as to what happened, what didn't happen, that's clearly erroneous, but if the facts are clear, then it's de novo?
Yes, we think that the facts are clear. There was no dispute.
In terms of what people said, okay.
Yeah, all the facts are we're not disputing what the findings of facts. We're also not disputing what was in our summary judgment motion. Those facts are not disputed.
So whether it's jurisdictional or not, you're just saying the facts are undisputed, the question is the legal consequence of the facts.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, and we believe that through, you know, the trial court judge concluded without citing to anything. He said, "Well, I don't think there was a meeting of minds there." However, he also found it that there was a special relationship between Swenson and Rockwell. He also found findings of fact that Mr. Rockwell did not expect any payment at all until the business produced a profit. And also, he determined that it was not until a year and a half after this relationship had existed that there was any type of a dispute. Mr. Rockwell said, Mr. Swenson said, I don't think you are entitled to 30%, you know, 38% of this partnership. And Mr. Rockwell said, you cannot change the terms of this partnership. That is, this partnership was established, you know, a long time ago, and now you're trying to change that? And that's what he said in July of 1999, a year and a half after this. And then he said that was the straw that broke the camel's back. That one incident is what caused Rockwell to decide to leave the business. However, before he left the business, he took a $4,000 draw off a Peter Pan account, which was a business account. Now, he acknowledged that he had absolutely no authorization to do that other than as the owner of the vessel. And so he decided he was going to leave the partnership, and then he takes $4,000 that he said he used specifically for his own personal benefit. He thought that was what he was owed for wages in this matter. So he took that amount of money, then he left the business. Now, if, in fact, this was simply an employer-employee relationship, then what was the justification for taking that money? It would have been embezzlement if it was simply an employer-employee relationship. Mr. Rockwell stated there was no signed agency document executed between he and Mr. Swenson. The only authority that he had related back to the whole beginning of this venture in April 22nd, 3 days before this supposed employment contract. So we had a partnership forming under Alaska law. It does not have to be writing. Our Alaska law recognizes oral partnerships. These two decided between themselves we're going to form a partnership.
Well, I'll go there, and then I go where Judge Fletcher was. We then have to look at the district court's finding of facts to find out whether under Alaska law those facts constitute a partnership. He said it was too vague or ambiguous, and he went through some analysis. So you say he was clearly erroneous in his fact finding.
Well, I think that conclusion, he did make his justification for not finding a partnership was that there was nothing in writing. And I thought
he was talking about the facts that were proposed, that those were too vague and ambiguous to show that there was a partnership.
He says there wasn't a meeting of minds, but that's not in the Alaska Uniform Partnership Act. In fact, the revised Uniform Partnership Act says that there is a partnership if two people are operating as co-owners, whether they intend to form a partnership or not. So this concept of intent is something that is a creation of reverting to contract line. So essentially the district court is preempting Alaska's Uniform Partnership Act.
And under Alaska partnership law, you have to have some terms of the partnership. What were the business terms of this partnership then, and where do we find them in the record?
Okay, those are found in that employment contract signed April 25th.
Where he was signed on as an employee.
Well, he was signed on as an employee, but there's an addendum to that. And that addendum, both parties acknowledged, identified what the partnership split between the two people was to be. So it's not, Rockwell argues that this is the same contract that every single person on that vessel signed, and that's incorrect. No other contract has on there this addendum. And this addendum established a 38%, 62% split. And it also says that the wages are only going to be brought about providing there's profit. And after there's profit, after you take out the expenses for the upcoming year, and then, and only then, is there going to be any wages. The district court even found that. The district court said there was no expectation of wages in this. So if this is an employer-employee relationship, there'd obviously be an expectation of wages. But more importantly is that we have this April 25th contract. Well, that was a year before this breakup. During the off-season, the vessel was put into dry storage. Both parties contributed without any, obviously it wasn't, there was no employment contract controlling this because it had nothing to do with the sea. Both parties contributed to fixing up the vessel. Both parties contributed to preparing the vessel for the upcoming season.
What do we do? I understand what you're saying. And there's some evidence on both sides. What do we do with the fact that there's a fair amount of evidence in the record under which your client, at various points, disavows the partnership?
Well, I don't think that he did. He disavowed the partnership July 1999. He didn't really disavow it. He simply said, you don't deserve this 38% that we're getting. I'm putting in all this money. I have to start working in the tugboat again in order to keep this business running. And at that point in time, the contract in dispute was not maritime. It was their relationship. And if that's the case, Alaska's uniform partnership law controls, and Rockwell should have sued in Alaska court to get a dissolution of the partnership, selling, you know, a winding up of this partnership relationship. You know, he shouldn't have taken it at face value that Swenson said there's no partnership. Alaska's uniform partnership law said there was a partnership.
Well, now, the partnership would be the physical boat and the fishing business, right?
The fishing business and a part of the partnership property would have been the fishing, the merchant vessel, Arch 1.
Who paid for the vessel?
The business proceeds.
No, who paid for the vessel? Who bought it?
Well, the title was in Mr. Rockwell because he was the only one with credit.
Who took the tax advantages of the boat? Who reported it on their tax returns? As a
well, both. The irony is that Mr. Rockwell said he was the sole proprietor of this Arch One venture. He also said he took depreciation and business expenses. He filed a 1099. Mr. Swenson also did. So both of them filed as the sole proprietors of that business.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, both. That's in the record. Mr. Rockwell signed that he knew, and in his statement to the IRS, at the bottom it says all these investments are subject to the risks associated with loss. He signed that. He knew that he was signing as a sole proprietor for the Arch One venture. And so there's not any other employees on the Arch One who were signing taking a Schedule C. I mean, he signed a Schedule C to the IRS. And then afterwards, when this little confusion occurred and he didn't think he was getting any money, then he decides, well, I think it'd be more profitable if I were a seaman, and then I'll sue under seaman. But, you know, I think this, the Pacific Merchant versus Aubrey is applicable in this case in that this vessel never left Alaskan territorial waters. And so I think that Alaska's police powers over defining whether or not somebody is or isn't a partner, I think that's more controlling than general contract.
Can we back up for just a minute? I'm reading from paragraph 5 of the district court's order, where the district court writes, the Arch 1 is now owned by defendant Swenson and has been since he purchased it on April 23, 1998, for a total sales price of... Plaintiff has never had an ownership interest in this vessel. Is that incorrect? Because I think I heard you say something different.
That is incorrect. What
in your view is correct, and what's the evidence in support of your view of what's correct?
Okay, and this is where reliance on Alaska partnership law controls, because Alaska partnership law says that there is a partnership interest in partnership property, irregardless of who owns the actual title to the vessel or the partnership property. So title may be in Mr. Swenson because he was the only one with credit who could negotiate this deal. However, because they had a partnership,
so
Mr. Rockwell...
Just make sure I got that right. So Mr. Swenson has record title.
Yes.
Mr. Rockwell is not on the title.
No.
Okay.
No.
And it says, which he purchased. Now, where's the money coming from?
The business.
I mean, the business doesn't exist until they buy the boat. Where's the money coming from to go into the business?
I believe that he didn't have to put up any money for the business. It was a negotiation with Tansina Corporation to get profit, you know, payments through the end of the season. He didn't pay cash outright. He still doesn't own the boat. He's making payments, and the payments were part of, there were some shipping contracts that were associated with the purchase of
so
that
there's
vessel.
So there's no down payment, there's no cash outlay?
Not that I'm aware of, and certainly Mr. Swenson didn't, I mean, if there was any, it would be, you know, $1,000 or something like that, but the key payments on this vessel were predicated on the vessel going out working these contracts that they have, and then making payments at the end of the season. So there was, you know, Mr. And that's the reason why Rockwell went to Swenson to negotiate this thing. Because, you know, Swenson had captain experience. He was a captain of a vessel. Rockwell wasn't. And so Rockwell could not captain that vessel. He couldn't negotiate sales and do all this stuff, but Mr. Swenson could. Now, Rockwell said, I can contribute some money to this. You can contribute experience. So what we have is it's truly a conflict between how this contract determined their relationship. And the error with the district court is that he never looked at the intricacies of the Uniform Partnership Act in Alaska to determine whether or not Mr. Swenson was incorrect.
Well, I thought that Swenson set up Swens Rock LCC as an alter ego of himself, and it did not include.
It was Sven Rock, which is a derivative of Mr. Swenson and Mr. Rockwell.
But it was only organized as an alter ego of Swenson, and Rockwell, as far as I know, was not part of it.
And that's why the name is Sven Rock.
Well, Swenson,
Rockwell,
and legally, he's
legally they set up a limited liability corporation to protect the interests of the vessel. And Mr. Mr. Rockwell was going to be legally on the separate limited liability corporation when he got his master's license, which he hadn't done before leaving this thing. But
I don't understand that. In other words, you have a limited liability corporation. Who is the corporation as far as a human being concerned?
Well, the limited liability company existed, and it was all it did. The partnership still controlled. Partnership agreement control between these two parties. So the limited liability company just protected both of them.
Who made the contract with Peter Pan to under which the drawing account was set up?
I'm not certain who negotiated the contract. Most likely, in 1999, Swenson was handling the paperwork on land, and so he most likely negotiated.
18-year-old boy that just got out of high school wasn't negotiating with Peter Pan then.
Well, he was the representative. He was in charge of the captain of the vessel in 1999. He was in charge of all the stuff going on. He was the representative of the Arch One venture.
When did Swenson first raise the question of admiralty jurisdiction in the court?
In our summary judgment motion, as soon as well before this case went to trial, we cited to the district court in our summary judgment all the statutes in the Uniform Partnership Act. We identified that this was a partnership.
So that was then denied, and the court found that it had jurisdiction under the admiralty law for seamen's wages and the usual.
Well, actually, he didn't. He found that there was a material fact as to jurisdiction, and this court has held that.
Then he went ahead and had a hearing on.
He didn't even have a hearing. He just said there's material facts on this jurisdictional issue, so it goes to trial. I think he used the wrong standard at summary judgment, material fact as to subject matter jurisdiction, and he said, well, let's go to trial to determine.
Did it go to trial on a pretrial order?
Yeah. Was
there any stipulation or anything about jurisdictional issues?
No, I re-argued I put on evidence to dispute any facts as to the meeting of minds as to partnership, and then argue that there wasn't a subject matter jurisdiction.
Well, the jolly little wards of admiralty have a lot of advantages when they come in with a complaint saying that they are seamen unpaid.
Yeah, but remember, in the complaint they filed under, they requested Alaska's Wage and Hour Act remedies. So here's a seaman because, you know, so he's suing under Alaska's Wage and Hour Act saying that he's a seaman, you know, so they're applying.
Well, under what act? How would he ask for wages if not under the Alaska Act?
Well, the Shipping Act but didn't apply in this case, and so he reverted to Alaska's Wage and Hour Act, which is, again, invoking. There's no diversity in this.
But if he is an employee, I don't think you can test that. If he is an employee and he's not paid his wages as a seaman, is it improper for him to rely on Alaska law for the entitlement to wages?
Well, I think that without diversity, I think that if the question is, if the affirmative defense is that there is a business relationship here, I don't think Admiralty can determine.
No, that's not my question. My question is, assume an employee-employer relationship. Mm-hmm. It's not contested. He was a seaman on the vessel.
Uh-huh.
Assume further that he has not been paid his proper wages.
Mm-hmm.
Is his proper remedy, when he goes to Admiralty Court, to rely on the Alaska statute?
Perhaps with Pacific versus Aubrey, you would have an argument that Alaska's Wage and Hour Act would control.
Yeah, so I think that's a red herring. Okay.
Yeah.
Why don't we hear from the other side?
Okay.
And then you're over time, but we'll give you a minute.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court. My name is Shane Carew, and I represent Seth Rockwell. The Court is very familiar with the facts. It's obvious. When I was preparing for today, I wasn't exactly sure what my approach would be because we were dealing, on the one hand, with the denial of motion for summary judgment, in which the Court is entitled to construe all facts in the light most favorable to the non-moving party. The Court then denied that motion and allowed Mr. Swenson the opportunity in a full trial to convince and put on evidence that apparently that there was some sort of partnership agreement, that there was a partnership and therefore there was no jurisdiction. After a full trial, after 2 days, after hearing all the evidence, the Court concluded that there was an employee-employee relationship and that the Court had jurisdiction. I would like to address then some of the questions that the Court had asked, and I'd like to make some clarifications and corrections to what's been represented. Up until Your Honor had a very good question about what was Mr. Swenson's conduct up to the time of trial with respect to whether or not there was a partnership.
Yeah, that seems to be very confusing, and I'm not. Maybe you could help us.
Well, the evidence before the Court, both at the summary judgment and both on summary judgment and at trial, was as follows, Your Honor, that he had taken the depreciation deduction on the Arch 1.
We heard here that both parties took depreciation.
That is incorrect, Your Honor.
Okay.
My client did not take a depreciation deduction on the Arch 1.
Did you file any documents with the Internal Revenue Service indicating that you were a part owner in a boat relative to income or otherwise?
The taxes, Your Honor, were prepared by Mr. Rockwell's father. I believe that the testimony at trial was he handled it the same way that a fisherman would, and they are essentially self-employed. With reference, and I believe that there was a reference in one of the documents, I don't know, and I was looking for it as the question came up, whether there was a reference to the name of the vessel.
No, that's fine. I mean, you're reporting wages, what did he report? Did he report profits and take depreciation, operating expenses? Did he report wages? What did he report?
No, Your Honor. He reported what he believed to be his wages. He had made a donation, or he had...
Well, maybe we better stop for just a second.
Okay.
Tell me what's in the record.
All right.
If there's anything about what he reported to the Internal Revenue Service with regard to his relationship to the boat or his employment.
What he had reported, what's in the record, is that he reported to the, on his tax returns, that he had received income as a self-employed income. That's what he had reported. He had not received a 1099 or a W-2. He just reported this income.
So like an independent contractor.
Independent contractor,
okay.
Your Honor.
Now,
like
that would be different than an owner reporting income from his business.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so if we read the record, we would find that he said, I'm an independent contractor on this boat, working as an independent contractor?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And do we have that tax return in the record?
I believe it is.
I don't see it here in the excerpts unless I've missed it in the excerpts.
I believe.
Is it in the excerpts?
Excerpt of record supplement, page 5, Your Honor.
Okay. And that's what I had been looking for, Your Honor. Even so, Your Honor, the other evidence before the court was that on credit applications, Mr. Swenson identified himself as the owner and a sole proprietor.
Tell me about the LCC. How was that set up, and what does it show?
That was created by Mr. Swenson without any consultation with Mr. Rockwell. It shows that he's the sole owner of all the interest in Swenrock.
Now, Swenrock was a limited liability corporation. What were listed as the assets, and he was listed as the owner. But what is the nature of the LCC? LLC.
Your Honor, I actually don't know. Title was never transferred of the vessel into the LLC.
Yeah, see, I don't know what the LLC means, because if the boat's not in it, it could mean, I don't know, fishing nets. I don't know, maybe fishing nets on somebody else's boat. I don't know.
I believe the testimony in the trial is that in subsequent years, Mr. Swenson intended to use and did use it as the employer. In the first
employer
of the employees on the Arch 1.
Okay, so they would have taken deductions for wages paid. They show that he took deductions for wages paid to Mr. Rockwell. Is that in the record?
No, Your Honor.
Because that doesn't give us much there.
It doesn't.
Okay.
Is this a purse-seining vessel?
No, Your Honor. It's basically it's essentially kind of a cargo vessel that could also be used theoretically for fishing, but principally what they were using it for was to take cargo to some of the villages in
Inter island freight and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
And some of the villages out in western Alaska.
So what you're telling me, I think, is that the LLC doesn't give us much of anything other than the fact that he was the owner.
Correct.
Okay.
What was the account with Peter Pan about if they weren't fishing?
They were also used as a tender vessel, and a tender vessel, Your Honor, is the sort of vessel that
the packers.
Yes.
Vessel goes out to the purse seiners and sucks up the fish.
That's right, and provides supplies for them. They can come to the tender vessel if they need ice or fuel, those sorts of things.
So they did have an account. Who made that account with Peter Pan? Who negotiated that?
I believe, Your Honor, that Mr. Rockwell was on the vessel, but that it was arranged through Mr. Swenson. I mean, it was Mr. Rockwell and Mr. Swenson.
Rockwell had signing authorities there, some kind of authority.
Yes, Your Honor.
He wouldn't have been able to pull out the $4,000.
Yes, Your Honor, which is not uncommon in accounts with fishing companies such as Peter Pan. They'll have, as a matter of fact, people can take draws if they're employees. They can take draws so long as there's permission from the employer or the person with the account to take draws.
How did Mr. Rockwell get the draw without, or did he have authority from Mr. Swenson to pull the $4,000 out?
He believed that he had authority because there was money there, and he
that's
was
not what he
money.
Believed. What did Peter Pan think? They gave him the money.
And Peter Pan believed that he had authority to draw the $4,000.
Is there anything in the record that tells us or shows us what Peter Pan had to tell it that he had authority to withdraw the money?
Your Honor, I cannot remember.
Okay. I've got a question about the tax return that I'm now looking at. I'm looking at the Schedule C for tax year 1999. It is on page 5 of that supplemental record. Name of proprietor, Seth Allen Rockwell. Principal business, Arch 1 Fishing and Cargo. Business name, Arch 1. Gross receipts or sales, $4,000. Then he's got repairs and maintenance, $10,066. That kind of looks like repairs and maintenance to both.
Yes, Your Honor.
So this treats him as an owner of the boat for tax purposes. That's what it sounds like.
Yes, Your Honor. And what had happened, Your Honor, and this is at the trial. This was all we went through this at length in the trial. What had happened is Mr. Rockwell got money from their mutual grandfather, and used that money for expenses because of the vessel needed to get ready to get underway, and that was repaid to him. That was eventually repaid to him.
Well, first of all, we asked about what the LLC was all about, and now we're getting the fact that we have boat vessel plate. Was income from the business, whatever they did, tender or otherwise, run through the LLC?
No.
Oh.
Not at this time.
So counsel's talking about how loose this was, and it really was a partnership. Sounds pretty loose.
Yes, Your Honor.
If it's that loose, then maybe you ought to address what counsel said. Is it loose enough to fit the partnership debt require, or is it loose enough to become a partnership under Alaska law, like he says? We haven't pinned anything down yet that really puts us into a situation of a clean employer-employee ship in a corporation, ship not in a corporation. So what does it all mean?
That's what was up to the trial judge, Your Honor.
And he wasn't clearly erroneous in his findings.
Though. Correct. And he was not clearly erroneous in his findings. Because...
What's your strongest evidence that he's an employee? Because so far I'm looking at a lot of evidence that suggests it's a partnership. What's your strongest evidence that he's an employee?
Strongest evidence that he's an employee was the employment contract.
That first contract that has the quote addendum at the bottom that specifies the 38% sharing?
38% over and above the shares. The second strongest evidence, actually,
that says wages are based upon 38%. It sounds very much like a profit sharing. Because now if we're in a loose area, that addendum sounds very much, I must have misread it, but I thought it said that it was 38, that the wages were based upon that.
Well, the trouble is, it's the document is at war with itself. It's an employment contract. It's got a fill-in-the-blank in consideration. I'm now looking at paragraph 2. Employer agrees to pay employee according to the following terms, $180 a day. Private contractors where they're responsible for their own taxes. Employer will provide meals and shelter. Already even that form is crazy. Private contractor, employee, okay. But then we got the addendum. After there's an agreement to pay wages of $180 a day, based on 38%, profit will be shared. This profit will be arrived at after boat monies repay 98 expenses, da-da-da-da-da. Sounds as though your construction, although it doesn't say over and above, sounds as though your construction's right. That is to say, I'll pay you you're going to get paid $180 a day. In addition, after we run this through and what profit's left over, you get 38%.
Correct.
Well, if after they get that left over, he gets 38%, why isn't he a partner? Being compensated for his work at $180 a day is part of the cost of the partnership.
Your Honor, because the partnership, even though there is that contract was subsequently and repeatedly basically disavowed by Mr. Swenson.
Well, give me the evidence now under which it's disavowed, because I mentioned that, and your adversary seems to think that there wasn't really much of a disavowal except for a contest about as to how much was owed under the partnership agreement. In what ways was it disavowed?
Yeah. There was testimony at trial from Mr. Rockwell, and also, I believe, testimony from Mr. Swenson with respect to how much he thought that he was going to give him, and that it all depended upon Mr. Swenson meeting certain obligations down the road, years down the road. He had to turn 21 he had to become a master. And then in other conversations, he said, well, it's everything is in my name. You basically get nothing unless I say so. Additionally, Your Honor,
I'm not just reading from Rockwell's testimony on direct. Eric told me that I couldn't legally be a partner, so it was like his way of making sure I was taken care of, you know, if we weren't expecting to see a profit, but, you know, if we did see a profit, I'd get a profit. Told me what was going on, we're going to get for the partnership percentages, because it was like a relative worth. But according to his testimony, he understands it to say, well, he can't be a partner because he's not 21.
Right. Correct. And then later in his testimony, at the trial transcripts, my supplemental excerpts at 4, Mr. Swenson had, or Mr. Rockwell testified that Mr. Swenson said he was not a partner.
Where are you on that page?
Lines 8 to 11, I believe you're on.
I'm on page 4 of the supplemental excerpts. Yeah, that's part of the question.
Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor, that was...
Okay, well, if you can't find it, don't... I'll waste your time now. Okay, but the question really was not so much affirmative testimony from Rockwell, although that's relevant. My question to you was, Swenson disavows. What's he say to disavow?
In the credit applications, Your Honor, also in the application of the National Marine Fisheries Service, which is supplemental excerpt pages 22-23. I'm sorry. My apologies. I had this. For some reason, I've misnumbered this. It was at the in the trial transcripts. Sorry, Your Honor. Okay. Yes, in the trial transcript, at pages 22 and 23 of the trial transcript, sorry, of the excerpt, it's the trial transcript, and Mr.
Now, are we excerpts, supplemental excerpts? I'm trying to follow you.
Sorry, supplemental excerpts, Your Honor.
Okay, I'm on page 22 of supplemental excerpts.
Right, and it's Swenson direct testimony.
Okay,
and Mr. Swenson was handed Exhibit 8 as an application for a vessel moratorium with the National Marine Fisheries, and in that application he listed the owner as Eric Swenson.
Okay.
All right. Let's see. And also, Your Honor, in two credit applications that he had made, he had listed himself as the Mr. Swenson had listed himself as the owner.
Where's that on the record?
That's lines 2-11 on supplemental excerpts 24. Credit application to, he was questioned at trial about the credit application made out to Eagle Enterprises. And
it occurs to, oh, I'm sorry, Chris.
And he states that as he's applying for this credit, that the credit application is Eric Swenson, DBA Swenrock. Let's and employees or agents authorized to charge to this account, he lists Seth Rockwell as an employee and agent in that document, Your Honor.
And do we have, this is the transcript introducing the document. Do we have the document in the excerpts, or do we have to go back to the original record to find it?
Your Honor, I did not include the actual
document. So we can find it in the original record?
Yes.
Then the question comes, what difference does it make who's listed as the owner under Alaska law if there can be a partnership formed regardless of what the title is? In other words, is that crucial to forming a partnership under Alaska law that the title is in both of our names or in the LLC?
Your Honor,
normally in partnership law, not necessarily so. I mean, I'm just speculating.
Yeah. Your Honor,
see, I'm wondering what this means. I mean, I understand what you're telling me, but I'm still wondering how it goes to resolving, as the district court took all this stuff in and he made the findings.
Yes.
So now we're going to whether the district court was clearly erroneous. What difference does that make when we're doing a clearly erroneous analysis?
Right. Your Honor, there basically was not, Mr. Swenson basically did not present that, yes, we are partners. He, on the one hand, is still denying that there's a partnership. He's not expressly stating what the partnership is, what the terms of the partnership are. We're not saying that this is a... We did not bring this case as a partnership dispute. Mr. Swenson is not basically saying, yes, we're partners and here's your partnership. What he's trying to do is trying to characterize a wage and an employer case as a partnership dispute. And that wasn't the issue. Those weren't the issues in the case.
Well, but it has to be the issue, because if this is a partnership rather than an employer-employee relationship, the district court has no jurisdiction.
Correct. But the it would be incumbent upon Mr. Swenson to prove then that this was a partnership,
And the district court disagreed. District court found there was no partnership. About
correct.
Employee
and
employee. Okay, good. Right. Thank you. Rebuttal?
Thank you, Your Honor.
I understand. I probably don't have a lot of time.
That's okay. Let's start out with a minute and see where we go.
Okay. Your question, one of your questions, Your Honor, was whether or not Mr. Swenson disavowed the partnership. Well, in summary judgment motion, we attached 16 letters from business entities identifying that Rockwell specifically said that he was a partner and that Swenson specifically told these persons, This is my partner, this is a co-owner of Arch One. Treat him as the co-owner of Arch One. And so this is where we get down to the Uniform Partnership Act. And as far as property goes, Alaska Statute Title 32050030 says all property brought into the partnership becomes property of becomes partnership property.
Now, were those letters introduced at the trial?
We had those people come in and actually testify.
Okay, yeah.
But that evidence
did come in.
Yes,
Because as I understand it, you didn't appeal from the denial of the summary judgment, you appealed the trial result.
No, I actually also appealed the denial of summary judgment.
And
in my brief, I identify why I thought the summary judgment should have been granted, and on either account, I ask that this court dismiss it. But this really gets to a Fifth Circuit case, Temple Drilling versus Louisiana, where it said admiralty jurisdiction over state law claims is at best uncertain, and courts have been reluctant to find admiralty jurisdiction where interpretation of a state statute is necessary for resolution. I think I cite that in my brief, but that's 946 Federal 2nd, 390. And that seems absolutely applicable here, because before the district court can determine whether or not there's a partnership, he has to reference the Uniform Partnership Act, and that is in Alaska, that two Alaskans sat there and devised as the controlling document. Alaska's law says, Alaska's partnership law says that this is what controls. That's at 32.5975, the liability of the partners.
But what it comes down to is, was the district judge correct in finding this was an employer relationship, or was he compelled by the evidence to find that there was a partnership?
Exactly.
On the other hand, I want to make one point.
Sorry.
To make sure I'm right. I just checked, you did appeal the denial of summary judgment. If we reverse that, we never get to the trial.
Exactly.
So the judge's findings are irrelevant if we go on that ground.
That's what I argue.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The last case on the argument calendar for this morning, Rockwell versus Clinton, is now submitted for decision. We're in adjournment until tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.
Thank you.